my first thing I'm really interested in is about your journey to where you are now, and how has that been an easy journey? Long, challenging?
Okay. Yeah, all right. So when I first started in this industry, there were very few women at the top of this area, the area that I'm working in, the media, and even fewer female writers, women writers. So it was difficult for me to have a role model. It was difficult for me to have a role model of who to sort of try and, you know, be or look up to. There were a couple of people in comedy that were breaking through, but not really anybody in drama, and certainly no in a high position in drama. So yeah, it's been a long battle, really, in some respects. But you know, I have to say that I've been helped by some men along the way. You know, David Liddiman helped me. You know, there's been a couple of people who have been there for me. Sally Head, fortunately, was the head of drama. So David Liddiman had made Sally Head the head of drama at Granada, and he gave her a Band of Gold to read. And and if it hadn't have been for him and her, Band of Gold would have never happened. Right. So I started off doing theatre where it was easier. I was sort of in charge of my own, you know, sort of destiny in a way, because after I graduated from Bretton Hall, a group of us got together and formed a theatre company called York Company. Yeah. And there, you know, there didn't seem to be an agenda about, you know, sexuality. You could, in theatre, and particularly fringe theatre, you could be a man or a woman or whatever, as long as you could make a play, put it on, entertain people, that was all, really. Although I remember one particular time, I'd written a play, and they came up from the Royal Court to view it and said, they thought it was too gruesome. And I remember thinking, or is it just because I'm a woman? Yeah. You know, because it wasn't me that got it. It was a man, funnily enough. And a man from the South. Things like that have just been part and parcel of my journey. They've never stopped me from doing what I do. I just keep on. And I just think, as long as I'm telling stories and people are enjoying them, that's the main thing.
Did you have a goal at all? Like when you were younger and you started out in theatre, did you have a goal to go to television, or was it just something that, you know, organically happened?
When I was doing theatre, somebody gave me a card. A member of the audience gave me a card afterwards. I really, really enjoyed that. It was a two-hander set in a marriage guidance council office, and it was an hour long. It was called Climbing Out, and it went down really well. And she gave me this card and she said, if ever you want to do television, please get in touch with me. So about a year later, or a year to 18 months later, my husband said, I want to go back to studying like you did, because I went back to studying as a mature student in my late 20s. And he was then in his mid-50s. And so I said, I couldn't say no to him, could I? So I thought, well, somebody's got to pay the mortgage. Somebody's got to feed the kids. And I was earning about 90 quid a week on a good week. So I thought, okay, I've got to do something. So I rang this number, went in to meet her. Her name was Barbara Peasland, and she was basically an actor's agent. And she said, I thought you're an amazing actress in that. She didn't know I'd written it as well. So she said, I'd love to take you on. And literally, it was about 5 days later, she rang me up, because it was before mobile phones, on the regular phone. And she said, you've got an audition at Granada Television in Manchester. And it's in a program called The Practice. So I went over to Granada, and I went into a room at Granada Television and asked, and they gave me the scripts, and I was looking for this part of the nurse, which was going to be, you know, my break into television. One line. She had one line. So I kind of said the line, and they went, very good. They went, very, very good. I'm going, are they being patronising? You know, because I'd done theatre pieces where I don't know, said millions of lines. Anyway, this director called Rick Mellis said to me, oh, he went, I know you. I've seen you in theatre. He said, go away. You're not going to get this job. And I remember I was on the train going home thinking, oh, my God, what did I do wrong? I'm thinking. And when I got home, I pressed, my answer machine was flashing. I pressed the answer machine button and my agent, Barbara, came on saying, well, I don't know what you did, but you got the part of the doctor. She said, and that's three episodes. She went, missing. So that was it. In fact, it was four episodes, as it turned out. And I played Dr. Barker in the practice. And Simon Rouse was my patient, and there'd been an explosion. And it was wonderful. And, you know, I had a great time, and I handled props and spoke, which they thought was amazing. And that was the start of it. And then I was in all sorts of television things. Right. All Creatures Great and Small. Some kids stuff and loads of things I was in.
Right.
But what that did more importantly was it gave me sight of a television script. Yeah. And I remember, is this it? Is this all you have to do? Because I thought a television script would be really complicated with Zoom shots and this and that. And it wasn't. It was just straightforward. All I had to do was write the characters and what they did. And I could do that.
Right.
So I wrote an episode of something called Albion Market, because I was cast as the police woman in it as well. And I wrote this episode, and I stuffed it in a brown paper envelope, wrote the producer on the front of it, because I had no idea who the producer was, and left it at the front desk. And then 2 weeks later, I got this call from Bill Podmore, who was the editor of Coronation Street and Albion Market, saying, I've read your script and I think it's brilliant. Will you come in and meet me? And all I could think about was, what does a writer wear?
What did you wear?
A trouser suit. Bought brand new because I had no money. Yeah. And the rest is history, so to speak, because I got a job working in the story development team. And then I met Paul Abbott, and then we came up with Children's Ward, and then I started writing Coronation Street, and then the rest, and then my Coronation Street, and wanted me to write Brookside, and yeah, I joined Coronation Street. I was the only woman there, other than a secretary in that room, because Adele Rose, who was the only other woman, was in Nairobi, and she only came in once every 2 or 3 months. But I was the only woman. I was the only woman under 40, apart from the secretary, and no other women. And I was terrified. All these super powerful men who were all established writers, and me.
And what was that like in the end? Like, were they kind to you? Did they help you? Did they listen to what you had to say?
Right over the top of me. Right, like I didn't exist. Honestly. And I remember saying, in fact, I've just had this conversation with someone. I remember saying, Curly Watts had a girlfriend. I forget what her name was. Okay. Anyway, yeah. It was Curly Watts' girlfriend. Shirley, I think her name was.
Yeah.
Shirley. Her friend was called Shirley. And she was a black woman. You know, a woman of colour. And I remember going, we could come up with a really good story for Shirley. And they all looked at me horrified and went, why would we do that? And I went, well, she's the only black woman that you've got in the series. And they went, oh, well, we're not in Shirley. Our character is Curly. I remember going like, oh, right, I see. You're not interested in any women or women of colour or anything like that. And very soon after that, I left. Mm. Sorry. Mm. Mm. Because by that time, Brookside were asking me to write for them. So I went over to meet Phil Redmond, And he introduced me to the writing team, who were brilliant. It was men and women, Jimmy McGovern, Chris Curry, you know, some really interesting writers in that room, Frank Cottrell, Boyce, etc. And it was much, much more evenly based. Yeah. And so I started writing Brookie. And then I wrote, then I went on to write Children's Ward and Just Us and Band of Gold and, yeah.
What was your, so at that point, did you think that you'd made it, really? Not, you know, as in that you kind of got to where you wanted to be, or did you feel like it was really unusual where you were?
Yeah, I think I started to recognise that I'd got a talent.
Right.
I think that started to happen because people started to tell, people started to say, oh, you're really good. Mm. And I remember Vanessa Whitburn was the producer on Brookside, and I wouldn't write an episode for 5 months until I could hear the Liverpool in my brain. And she was saying, when will you write an episode for me? When will you write? And I went, when I can hear it, when I'm not struggling to, you know, when I'm not forcing something. And she went, I need you to write an episode. And so the following commissioning, I took 2 episodes and I wrote them. And then she rang me and she went, they're utterly brilliant, Kay. They're utterly brilliant. And I remember, I'll never forget that, because, you know, she was one of the first people to tell me that it was brilliant, that I could write, that it was, that I was, you know, it wasn't just Yorkshire. I was doing a dialect. I was doing Liverpudlian. Yeah. And then, of course, David Liddiman, who I was trying to get, you know, I was trying to get Band of Gold, and nobody, I couldn't get Alan Yentob to read it. I couldn't get to read it, BBC. And I was so frustrated. And I was, you begin to start doubting yourself. You begin to go, are they good? I think they're good. I haven't seen anything like that on television. I really want to, you know, I want to break through with this. And I pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed as hard as I could. And I used to go to award ceremonies just so that I could meet Alan Yentob to ask him to read my scripts. But I was a woman from the north of England writing about sex workers in the north of England. You know, it was like I was in a different country. It was like, you know, I was writing language. Right. And took David Liddiman to read them at Granada. He asked me, because he knew I was frustrated, and he said, can I read it? Can I read them? And I went, because there were 4 then. And I went, you can read them, David, but therefore it's for the BBC. Anyway, he read them and he went, okay, they're brilliant. They're so good. He went, I want to give them to Sally Head, head of drama. And he said, please let me give them to Sally. And again, I said, yeah, you can give them to Sally, but you know, they're the BBCs. And he gave them to Sally, and Sally said, I want to make this, and I want you to write another 2. So it was so exciting for me. Then at that time, it was like a time for me when things were really going well. And I wrote Band of Gold, and I wrote another 2 episodes for ITV, and they put it on, and we got phenomenal viewing figures. I mean, like, staggering. You wouldn't get viewing figures like that today. Not even The Bodyguard got viewing figures like, you know, it was like 18 million people watched it overnight, not consolidated, overnight. It was incredible.
Wow.
But some of the reviewers were unkind at first. They said things like, "Ooh, I feel like having watched Band of Gold," they said things like that. And then we got some amazing reviews as well. So it was a mixture. Not everybody loved it. But those people that didn't love it in the beginning loved it at the end. A bit like, you know, Killing Eve. Those people that don't like it in the beginning, suddenly they see that everybody loves it, kind of, oh, I love it too. You know, I can't be wrong. But And then I had a stage show. I had A Passionate Woman in the West End at the same time as Band of Gold was hitting the screens.
Right.
So, yeah, I had A Passionate Woman in the West End, and that was glorious reviews, full houses. And I felt that I'd arrived. I felt that was, I thought, you know what? This is wonderful. You know, this is exactly what I wanted to do in life. For a working class woman that was married at 16 with kids, you know, and I didn't even know a writer, I didn't know an actress. That was not within my world, you know. I thought I'd done all right.
Do you think anyone can write, Kay? Do you think, or did you, you know, with you, did you always know that you had a talent for writing? Like, even when you were little?
Mm. Yeah, because I was the aggravating kid in the classroom who used to do plays at the front of the class, you know. And I was the one that would say to Margaret Pickering, who was my friend, you say this, say that, then you say this and I'll say that. I was that kind of kid. And we'd entertain all the class, you know, and it's interesting. An American teacher who was over in England on secondment said, you know, I wish I could take you back to the States with me. You'd earn me a fortune. And I hadn't a clue what she was talking about. Not a clue. But, you know, I do understand that. I did used to think, I went through a period where I thought everybody could write. Mm-hmm. I was convinced that everybody could write. And I went around telling everybody that they could write. And I would be disappointed when something come in the post, or a huge script like this thick would come in the post with dense dialogue, and I couldn't even sift my way through it to actually find out what the writer was trying to say. Yeah, so I now don't think that everybody can write. I think that some people can write. You need a bit of flair. You need, you need a bit of flair, and you need tenacity, because there are a million people there ready to say no to you. Yeah. It's hard. You have to grow a broad back. You have to, and particularly if you're a woman, still, you have to grow a broad back, and you have to believe in what you're writing. And also you have to have something really important that you want to say, you know, as well. That would be my advice, I suppose.
So what's a normal day for you like? Like, what's your, how does like a normal day when you're writing, what does that look like? What time does it start, for example?
Okay, so my day begins probably around about 10 o'clock. I'll probably drift in here, which is my writing room, and I either pick up where I left off the day, you know, the day before, or I might be starting something new, or I might be looking at a storyline, and you know, I'll either bring up a script on my laptop, or you know, where look at where I was up to. I'd probably work pretty solidly until about one.
Right.
So from 10 till one, probably about, you know, solid. Don't often move. To be honest, unless I go and make a cup of tea or play with my little dog for a few minutes, and then I'll break for lunch, I'll have my lunch, and then depending on things that have come in the morning, my PA Rosie might say, I've got some things I need to run past you, so I might sit with Rosie and go through the things that need to be gone through, and then I'll probably go back and look at what I've written.
Right.
Go back and look at what I've written and edit it. Edit what I've written and then move forward a little bit. And that will take me until possibly about 5-ish, or no, maybe about 4. 4:30 to 5. And then I'll break and take my little dog out for a walk. And then I'll come back and do a bit more, do about another hour. And then call it a night, possibly. That can be anything from about 5 to about 7:30, 8 o'clock, that window. And it depending on whether or not I'm behind or in front, I either will do another couple of hours or maybe 20, depends on where I am. Right now, I'm in front with the script, so it's possible that I won't work very late this evening. I try not to work late into the evening. I try to, by 8 o'clock, definitely I've cut off, you know.
Does it ever get before?
Uh, sometimes I think I'd like to meet up with my mate, right. meet up with my friend, or take a lunch, or, you know, with friends or my family or my daughters, or take my dog out for a long walk. And I, but largely I do that. If I feel like it now, I do. I love what I do. I love what I do still. This is because I've created a world that I love being in. It's exciting. And, you know, and I know if it excites me, it will excite an audience. If it's a chore for me to go to, then that it's probably not going to, it's not working. I've got to want to come here. And if I want to come to this laptop, to this table, I know that I've probably got something good on the boil.
Yeah.
And if I'm also, or if I finish ahead, you know, if I, like now I'm up to page 50 of a BBC script, which is really good, means I've broken its back. So, and that usually is a good sign, because it means I'm excited to be here and I'm forging forward. If I'm, you know, if I'm kind of going, oh, I'm on it to page 20 and I don't know what I'm going to do and I don't know what's going to, you know, it's not good. Probably should be thrown in the bin.
And Kay, you ate organic food before it was cool, yes. didn't you?
Yes.
Do you is it still like a big part of your life?
Yeah, I eat organic food. I try and keep healthy because, you know, I think it's good to keep my mind, you know, and my body as healthy as I possibly can. Go out for a walk a couple of times, you know, a day with my little dog, take some fresh air, look at the woodland. You know, it's interesting reading this week in China, you know, or is it Japan, where they've said that, you know, walking the woodland is hugely beneficial, you know, and I do it twice a day. I don't run. I just walk and walk my little dog and look at the trees and the rhododendron bushes and life and listen to bird song. I do that and it makes me feel great. And I walk with my husband, Anthony, and my little, and I love that. And I try and eat well. Yeah, absolutely. I try and think to myself, you know, what am I putting in my body? And what am I putting on my body as well? So I get things online that I know are organic or, you know, pure. I try to do that.
Yeah.
Don't always succeed. Sometimes I eat out, you know, and when I eat, there is no organic restaurants in the north of England, hardly. Yeah. So I have to eat whatever, you know, but I try my best.
Yeah. And so what does the evening look like for you? Like, do you go out or do you,
So sometimes I go out to the theatre. I'll go see something at the Grand Theatre. I might go see something at the West Yorkshire Playhouse. Like the other night, I went over to Bradford to see a piece about Andrea Dunbar. So I maybe once a week, I'll go to the theatre. And then I might go to the pictures. I might go see a movie that's on at the Hyde Park or at the, you know, or at the local, you know, I like to try and support cinemas. And then I like to watch television. I like to keep abreast of what's going on. You know, so I'm trying to catch up with Gentleman Jack and Years, all these things. You know, Sally is a big, you know, I stuck my neck on the block for Sally. I love her writer. So I, you know, I try and see everything that she's written and support her where I can. I answer emails, personal emails, anything that's come in. Like, I see my friend Linda. I have a group of girlfriends that I meet regular as well. They come here and we'll get food in and we'll have a glass of wine and it's really nice. We'll sit in this room, actually in my room, and chat about life. That's really quite good. Yeah, I probably do that, you know, at least once a month. I meet up with my friend at least once a week, a girlfriend of mine who's been my dear friend since we started school on day when we were three.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm fortunate because I've got family and friends, you know, all close here. And that's why when people say to me, why do you live in the north of England or why do you live in Leeds? I kind of go, because that's where all the people that I care about live.
Yeah.
And also I love Leeds. I love Yorkshire.
Have you ever been tempted to move to, say, like LA or anything like that for writing or working on bigger shows? Or
I've been asked to move to LA. I've been to LA probably half a dozen, maybe more, maybe eight. And I've been asked twice to live here. You could earn a really good living. You could be a script doctor. You could be a this, you could be a that. It's not what I want to be. It's not what I want to do. I recently, the last time was a couple of years back now. Steven Spielberg's company bought The Syndicate, an American, you know, for his company. What's his company called now? Amblin, television company, to make. He wanted to make it a US version. And I remember being in Topshop with my granddaughter when he rang me and said, would I consider coming over and living there for a year to show run the first season? And I just looked at Grace, my granddaughter, who was trying a coat on. And I looked at her and I thought, do I really want to be in LA doing a season of something I've already done here and been successful in the UK? And I thought, no, I don't. And I said, what's the alternative? And he said, well, you could be an executive producer and you could fly in and out, you know, of LA, and we'll send you scripts and stuff like that. And I went, I think I'd rather do that. And that was the last conversation that I had, which was probably about 3 years ago, three or four years ago, something like that. Yeah. So ask me today, probably be the same answer. I don't mind going there for a period of time, as long as I don't have to live there. Maybe it wouldn't be the same if I was. Maybe it wouldn't be the same if I didn't have a close, you know, close family and close friends. And also I've got a company of, you know, I've got a company and those people rely on me. I'm the managing director of that company, and I'm not going to up sticks and go and leave everybody. It's important to me. And it's also important to me to nurture other writers coming up. Yeah. You know, that's really important to me. I'm currently nurturing or mentoring six writers, and that is incredibly important. So that it would mean abandoning them and all the development work that I'm doing, which I feel passionate about.
So, you know, so with your business, your production company is one of the top production companies in the UK, and it's done amazingly well, unbelievable. How have you found also running that as well? Because that's kind of, you know, being a writer is one thing, but then also running a company is another thing. Has that been challenging and or easy or?
Yeah, at times it's been challenging because I've hired the wrong people. Mm-hmm. I've realized that just because somebody can do, you know, be a script editor, it doesn't mean that they can also be a development person. It doesn't necessarily, the two don't follow. And so I've put people in positions that I've thought that they could handle and they couldn't. And also I've elevated people and I've gone against my mission, even though somebody is, you know, even though I've gone through a huge interview process and the person is the best person on paper, and this person is the best on the best interview, there's been a niggle in me which has gone, she's not right. And I've been persuaded to go with that person because they're the best on paper and they're the best and they've done the best interview. And I've regretted that. I've regretted not following my instinct. So now I go with my instinct, and everybody who is around in this company now and the position that they're in are there because I believe in them and I believe they can do it 100%, and they do, and that allows me to do my job, to do my other job, my main job, which is right. And they protect me and they take a lot off my shoulders, each and every one of them. And they can work on their own and know when to come to me. And that is a huge skill that they have. And I like to pride myself that that I've learned something along the way.
So imagine that you were an older lady and you'd retired and had all your career, and you looked back at your life and your career. What advice would you give to your younger self?
It's funny because I was so tenacious as a younger person, and I give in earlier. I give in now. It's like, so if there was a script now that got a knockback, I would kind of go, oh, maybe it's not right. Whereas as a young woman, a younger woman, I would fight and fight and fight and fight. I had a lot of fight in me, because I would have never got Band of Gold on the screen had I not had that fight. And I think I can learn something from that younger woman. And my advice to me as an older woman would remember what you were like as a younger woman, you know, because actually you were tenacious and you knew that what you had was a unique story, and that needed to be told, that story needed to be told. And I would fight harder, and I should do anything that I utterly and totally believe in today. So sorry for turning it around a little bit, but that's the God's honest truth. Fight hard. Any young person out there, you need to fight hard and believe in your talent. Believe in your talent and fight hard. There are people there to knock you back. You don't knock yourself back. The more you believe in your project, the more other people will believe in it.